that was coming to keep things running.
Good morning. We will call the September 6, 2023 meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors to order. Director Corona, would you like to lead us in the flag salute this morning?
Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I would like to ask the board secretary if she could read the virtual participation suggestions and do a roll call of the board, please.
Absolutely. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. And please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. We will now do roll call. President Pauly.
Present.
Director Corona.
Here.
Director Slauson.
Here.
Director Armstrong.
Here.
Our legal counsel is here, and just to note, Director Record is absent.
Very good. Thank you so much. April, do we have anybody who's indicated they'd like to do public comment for any item not on the agenda this morning?
No, we do not.
Very good. With that, we will go to our executive reports. Mr. Mawad.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packet. Under new and ongoing items, I'm pleased to share with you that last week, the county Board of Supervisors approved agreements between the county and EMWD that would support four additional projects with American Rescue Plan funding. Specifically, the Board of Supervisors' actions last week would add another $12 million of ARPA funding to EMWD. Projects that were included in the action was up to $7.25 million for the Highway 74 sewer infrastructure project, $3 million towards the San Jacinto Valley groundwater treatment plant, an additional $1.5 million towards the Well 37 facility as well as a pipeline, and $250,000 towards the Mission Canyon 1 pipeline project. We're very pleased with the county's continued support of EMWD. To date, the county's ARPA funding totals approximately $28 million. Next item, I wanted to share with you that over the last 2 weeks, we've had a number of meetings to advance our efforts to develop a framework to participate in the Doheny Ocean Desalination Project. In fact, just yesterday, Lene and I were at Metropolitan Water District. We met with the Metropolitan team as well as South Coast Water District, MODOC, and other agencies. And the purpose of the meeting yesterday was to develop a framework where non-adjacent Metropolitan member agencies can exchange water supplies. And frankly, the discussion centered around Eastern's interest in how we can get access to the Doheny water and whether that water would be designated as local supplies for Eastern or whether it would qualify for extraordinary supply designation. And, of course, the LRP funding is part of that discussion. So it was a really helpful discussion, frankly, you know, for us and for the others that have participated. It wasn't only about Eastern's interest in Doheny. It was setting up a potential framework that other metropolitan member agencies could benefit from and help rebalance their portfolios. Those that currently don't have local resources would potentially be able to partner with agencies that do. So overall, it was a good discussion. I think we're contributing a great deal to the conversation. And frankly, ultimately, this framework is going to benefit the entire region. Concurrently to that effort, we have been meeting with South Coast to negotiate the terms of our participation in the proposed Doheny project. And there's been some drafts shared, but there's still some details to be addressed, including the off-ramps that potentially we would want to consider and other financial matters that we're still negotiating. So more to come. As those negotiations advance, we will be bringing the item, hopefully, forward to the board before the end of the year for approval of an agreement with South Coast. Next, I wanted to share with you that On August 25th, Jolene Walsh and I traveled to San Francisco to meet with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers South Pacific Division. As you're aware, the Army Corps has been a longstanding partner of EMWD in supporting our South Paris desalination program. And in addition to working with the L.A. District, we have, over the years, worked very closely with SPD, as well as, of course, when we go back to Washington, D.C., we meet with the Army Corps headquarters. Part of our ask for SPD and L.A. District is to consider increasing or amending our current WARDA authorization from $50 million up to $100 million that we would like to advance. South Pacific Division was very supportive of our ask, as well as continuing to support our project needs going forward with annual inclusion of the project as part of their work plan. So it was a really fruitful conversation that we had. We have also invited the incoming commander, Colonel Andrew Baker, who's now the commander of the L.A. District. He'll be coming out to visit with us as well as tour our facilities on September 15th. So we're looking forward to hosting him and, again, sharing with him what our partnership has provided for the community that we serve. Under items of interest to the board, wanted you to be aware that I'm sure you were tracking the storm event that recently occurred, but for us, it was much more than just tracking it. We actually took a number of steps to make sure that our system was well protected in case there was any impact. We were uncertain as far as the path of the storm. You know, we were hearing that it could dump several inches of rain on our service area. So to that, to make sure that any impact was mitigated, we worked closely with our operations staff, our safety and risk management staff, and frankly, our public government affairs staff. All the entire team, frankly, worked to take additional steps, including making sure that our treatment plants had our team at the plant overnight to make sure that if there was any lack of access on roadways after the storm event, that we would have individuals there manning the treatment plants. We had additional standby crews, including standby generators, ready to deploy to specific target lift stations. We also made sure we have our messaging up on our website and made sure that our customers know we're ready to make sure our system continues to serve our customers, as well as if they see anything, please let us know. So we took a number of steps, and fortunately, we really didn't see much impact from the storm. There was only one lift station that we saw a high-level alarm on, and we did deploy the crews out there. But overall, we did not see any type of impact other than the one that I just cited. I just wanted to really express my appreciation to the whole team, the operations team who was working over the weekend, to the public governmental affairs team on safety and risk, who was in coordination with the county monitoring the path of the storm and the emergency response requirements. And we did activate our emergency operations center to a management watch, not knowing exactly what the full force of the storm would be. Finally, under items of interest to the board, I wanted to remind the board that I will be on vacation starting September 15th, return to the office on September 25th. I unfortunately will not be here for the September 20th board meeting, but the deputy general managers and assistant general managers will be here to cover the meeting as well as address any issues that may arise during my absence. I do have one more introduction that I was going to make, but before I do that, I wanted to find out if there's any questions on my report.
Director Armstrong.
Yeah, just two things. One, I hope you enjoy your well-earned vacation.
Thank you.
And don't think about Eastern or water stuff.
Thank you, Dr. Armstrong.
But I think it's a good update on the Doheny Ocean Desal project, and just compliment the team on making progress. I think sometimes there's that thing of there's unintended consequences to things, but this is like unintended benefits on this. And I think there might be even additional benefits that we don't know about by just investigating this and pursuing it even to the degree that it is. And advancing those framework issues at Metropolitan, I think that this is going to help expedite those conversations that need to happen and will be a big benefit to all of Southern California. So I think just going as far as we have done, even no matter what comes out of it, has been a benefit. So
I agree.
Just congratulations. Yeah.
Your comments? No, I just wanted to say kudos to Matt and his staff on the storm.
Yep.
issue. I think we all watched that, and I was very confident that Eastern had that under control. It wasn't as big event as the media kind of made it, but the fact that we did the drill and ran through it and we were prepared is just kudos to you, Matt, for quarterbacking that. So, and I'll also echo Director Armstrong's comment on the Doheny thing. I'm very excited about potential additional water resources for this district. So thank you and the team for working on that.
Thank you, President Pauly. Appreciate the feedback. And with that, I want to turn it over to Pakal, who's going to introduce a new member of our team.
Well, good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Jolene and I are pleased to share that after a very thorough recruitment process, our governmental affairs team is now fully staffed. So Wajiha Noor joined EMWD just a couple of weeks ago as a governmental affairs analyst, and she's already hit the ground running. We're very excited to have her on the team, and we think she's going to bring great insight and policy expertise as we continue to work on state and federal legislation. So just want to hand it off to her and have her introduce herself. Thanks.
All right. Well, welcome.
Thank you, Pakal. Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. My name is Wajiha Noor. As Pakal mentioned, I joined EMWD a month ago as a government affairs analyst. Prior to that, I have a bachelor's in economics and finance and an MBA degree from Pakistan. In 2022, I graduated from UC Riverside with a master's in public policy. I worked at UCR as a graduate student researcher with Dr. Kurt Schwabe, and I looked at issues related to water and water affordability and water quality during my research. Before joining EMWD, I was part of the public fellowship at WRCOG. I was placed at the Economic Development Coalition of Temecula. I was responsible for doing research on the commuting workforce patterns in Southwest Riverside County. I also helped design their marketing campaign for recruiting talent to the region. I'm really passionate about water and environment, and part of that reason stems from the fact that I grew up in a family of farmers. I'm really excited to be here, and I wish to contribute as much as I can towards the betterment of the people of this district. I'm looking forward to working with everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you, Pakal. Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Very good. Nick?
Nothing this morning.
Linaya?
Nothing for me either, President Pauly.
Matt?
All right, I'll break the streak.
Okay, good. I was hoping.
No, just real briefly, in total this year, we've recharged over 9,000 acre feet. So recharge operations are going well, and we're just over 2,000 acre feet into pre-deliveries for 2024. So those operations are still going well.
And those look like they're going to continue through the fall here? And
yes, I think Met is still signaling into early 2024.
Okay. Excellent. Any questions for anybody else? Okay. Thank you so much. We're going to item three on our agenda today, which is our consent calendar. I understand, Director Slauson, you would like a separate vote on item C. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Very good. Do any other members of the board want a separate vote or discussion on anything?
I would move all items other than item C.
Moved by Director Corona. Second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote on that?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes.
And for the record, I'm abstaining from it, from the vote, because one of my clients would benefit from this extension of this year.
Very good. Okay, so that passed 4-0. Director Record absent. Director Corona moves item C. Director Armstrong seconds it. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Item C passes on a vote of 3-0 with Director Record absent and Director Slauson not participating in the vote. That will bring us to our action calendar, item 4. We'll start with item A, which is to approve and authorize a 5-year agreement with Tulare Ranch Magan Farms in the full amount not to exceed a total of $20.9 million Biosolids Management Services Agreement. Mr. Wasserman, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauli. $2
million. All right.
So by way of background, in July, we received four proposals in response to our solicitation for Biosolids Management Services. Tule Ranch began farms of Fresno, California, provided the one of our incumbent suppliers provided the highest scoring, lowest cost proposal. Biosolids Management Services are provided at each of EMWD's four regional water reclamation facilities with more than 58,000 wet tons of material removed each year, with projections expected to increase over the next 5 years. Biosolids are hauled daily to Arizona and incorporated into farmland for agricultural use. So an evaluation team made up of staff from water reclamation, safety, risk, and emergency management, environmental and regulatory compliance, and purchasing departments evaluated the proposals on criteria that included capabilities and resources, beneficial reuse, redundancy, contract sustainability, district's interpretation of risk, and cost. The evaluation team identified criteria and weighting based on current market conditions in the regulatory environment. The scoring summary reflecting these weights is located on page 2 of the board letter. As you might recall, earlier this year, Arizona officials considered new legislation that could have affected land application of biosolids in Arizona. Ultimately, a bill was passed in Arizona allowing Class B biosolids to be land applied in accordance with current state and federal regulations. And Director Slauson, during the committee meeting a few weeks back, you asked a question regarding what would happen contractually if land application was suddenly not allowed in the state of Arizona. So just to recap, our contract specifically provides for alternate sources of disposal in that event. If that were to happen, it may result initially in increased cost. However, regulatory compliance and others have looked at the issue, and we have no indication that this is going to happen anytime in the near future. It also is a reason why we're advancing a biosolids master plan, and we'll look at the long-term viability and future costs. So biosolids management services are priced on a cost per wet ton basis. Contracts for these services include provisions for price adjustments due to transportation costs and are tied to fuel price indices in our area. The provision provides both upward and downward pricing adjustments over the term of the contract. Tule Ranch provided the lowest cost submittal of all proposers at each facility and proposed pricing of $63.50 per wet ton at the Paris and Temecula treatment plants, and $65.75 at Moreno Valley and San Jacinto treatment plants. The other three companies submitted pricing that ranged anywhere from $68.50 to just over $102 per ton. Biosolids production is anticipated to increase from 61,000 tons in 2024 to approximately 70,000 tons by 2028, with projected costs starting at approximately $3.9 million in 2024 up to about $4.5 million in 2028. Over the past 12 months, expenditures for biosolids management services totaled approximately $3.3 million, or about $54.26 per wet ton. And under the recommended agreement, projected first-year costs are anticipated to be about $3.9 million, or about $64 per wet ton. The higher pricing is due to industry increases in driver pay, impacts of inflation, and higher fuel costs. So during the RFP process and following submittals, purchasing department staff had contacted several Southern California agencies to understand their biosolids pricing as well. Coachella Valley Water District, Western Municipal Water District, the cities of Corona, Oceanside, Riverside were all confirmed that they've also experienced increases over the past several years, with hauling distance and contract terms contributing to this pricing. Three of the five agencies surveyed paid higher costs than what we're getting now with Tule Ranch with the new agreement, with Coachella Valley Water District and the City of Oceanside receiving a lower but comparable rate. So Tule Ranch is going to beneficially reuse district-generated biosolids through the incorporation into farmland located in Yuma, Arizona. Tule Ranch has access to over 6,300 acres of property in Yuma County, Arizona, and they have arrangements, if needed, with landfill operations in Wellton and Buckeye, Arizona. Tule Ranch has provided biosolids management services to several large metropolitan wastewater agencies for over 30 years and to the district for the past 15 years. In this time, they have effectively supported plant operations, They've maintained their pricing over the past 5 years of our current agreement, and they've been recognized as a district supplier of the year. Also, EMWD's Environmental and Regulatory Compliance Department confirms positive performance from Tule Ranch with the United States Environmental Protection Agency and the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality. As referenced earlier, the district has hired a consultant to conduct a biosolids master plan, which will include recommendations focusing on solutions that address costs and minimize risk and market regulatory conditions as market and regulatory conditions change. So at this time, our recommendation is for the board to approve and authorize a 5-year agreement with Tule Ranch McGann Farms in the full term not to exceed a total of $20,950,000. I just also want to let the board know that Kurt Weirich and Kevin Good are here today representing Tule Ranch.
Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate it very much.
And they've been with Tule Ranch for the past 15 years. We work with them quite often. They've done a wonderful job for us. So with that, are there any questions I can try and answer at this time?
No. I mean, and I know this has been vetted through committee, but I kind of share the same concerns as Director Slauson, a little bit of where the political environment in Arizona is going to a point someday that we may not be able to utilize that.
So, again, we've got backup operations with landfill, and, mm-hmm. and Tule Ranch has those agreements in place mm-hmm. if needed, and we're also advancing a biosolids master plan as well.
Yeah, and I think to that concern, President Paul, you're correct. I think it was last year that we saw proposed legislation in Arizona that, if not changed in terms of the language, could have had an impact, but fortunately did not. But when we track that legislation, to your point, we recognize that we need to look at diversification. And so the master plan that Jeff is referring to, we are going to look at various options, including composting, including treatment to Class A, looking at dryers, sludge dryers. So we're going to look at the entire suite of options and what others in Southern California have also considered, recognizing that there may be an added cost to those options. But we will weigh the benefits and the trade-offs, and obviously we'll share the results of the master plan with the board and get direction. But we strongly believe that this contract, up to 5 years, with Tule is necessary to obviously maintain our operation.
Oh, no, it is. It just concerned me about the political environment that makes sometimes I think legislators get ahead of themselves without solutions to solve a problem. So just a note on that. But with that, I will look again. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. I'll look for a motion and a second on the item. Motion by Director Slauson, second by Director Armstrong. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you for the presentation. We will go on to item B, which is to approve and authorize award a contract to SRK Engineering for $4.4 million under specification 1485S, Ketching Street and Iris Avenue Sewer Replacement Project, an additional appropriation of $5.5 million. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. I'm pleased to present the staff's recommendations for award of construction for the Ketching Street and Iris Sewer Project. Before we begin, I wanted to introduce Sherry Kirkpatrick with SRK Engineering. They were the low responsive construction firm for this project. Sherry?
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I just, honorable board, I just wanted to introduce myself. My name is Sherry Rabuano Kirkpatrick. I am the president and owner of SRK Engineering. I don't know if you're going to go there, but just a little background about me. I'm a professional engineer. We have two professional engineers on staff. We have about 50 employees. We've been doing utility projects like this all through Southern California, and we've reached our 100 million mark. So experience-wise, we are more than capable of doing it. We're also a unique company. We're a women-owned, disadvantaged business enterprise. I actually worked for Rainbow Municipal Water District for over a decade. I was an engineering manager there. So we're a nice, unique contractor where I know what you guys want, and we're also a heavy civil contractor. So.
All right. Thank you for being here. Can I ask, where are you guys located at?
Our headquarters is in Escondido.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you for coming this morning. Appreciate it very much.
All right. Let's begin on the presentation here. Oops. By way of background, the project's located in the city of Moreno Valley. And reviewing the graphic starting at the top, the extent of sewer replacement starts up at Gentian Avenue, runs south along Kitching Street down to Iris Avenue with a short segment that runs along Iris Avenue to La Fortuna Lane. The purpose of this project is to replace the existing 18-inch on Kitching Street and 15-inch on Iris with a 24-inch sewer. The growth and development within the city of Moreno Valley has increased sewer flows within the trunk sewer system, requiring staff to conduct an assessment and analysis of our capacities within the system. As a result of that assessment, we identified the upsizing of these two segments, as indicated in the graphics. In June of this year, Cozen and Fox completed the final design, and the project was bid in July. Four bidders bid the project, and four bids were received on August 3rd. SRK Engineering submitted the lowest responsive bid in the amount of just shy of $4.5 million. The engineer's estimate was 4.9, so that's approximately a 9% difference. Staff also negotiated a fee with Cozad and Fox in the amount of $27,000 for engineering support services during construction, as well as it negotiated a fee with Converse Consulting for soil testing and inspections during construction. With respect to schedule, if the board chooses to approve, we intend to provide notice to proceed in September, notice of award in September of 2023, and we anticipate a one-year construction duration. Therefore, our recommendations today is for the board to approve and authorize a construction contract with SRK Engineering in the amount of approximately $4.5 million, a contract with Cozen Fox for engineering services during construction in the amount of approximately $27,000, and award of a contract with Converse in the amount of approximately $110,000, as well as additional appropriation of $5.5 million, which brings the total estimated project cost to approximately $5.8 million. With that, I'll entertain questions.
Any questions on this item? Director Slauson.
Yeah, I neglected to ask this at Option Engineering, but does their contract include preparation of the traffic control plans?
Yes, it does.
Okay, because that's the new...
Well, actually, the traffic control, I believe we prepared those as part of our design, so they'll execute those.
All right.
But Scott, I believe the contractor will process the traffic control plans and permit with the city?
Yes, correct. They'll do the final processing. Thank you for that clarification.
Can you move the item?
I will move approval.
Second by Director Corona. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Again, thank you for being here to tell us about your company this morning. We will move on then to item C, which is to approve and authorize facilities oversizing and relocation reimbursement with Mission Pacific Land Company, PW Land Investments, for $3.6 million. As a part of Phase 1 Park Development Specific Plan and appropriation in the amount of $3.6 million. Mr. Wallace, good morning, sir.
Good morning, and good morning, President Pauley and members of the board. I'm pleased to be presenting this today on behalf of our principal engineer, Armando Arroyo, who is also on vacation. In today's presentation, I will provide background on this request with regards to EMWD's legacy obligations with the developer and past planning facilities planning effort, the Park West Specific Plan Development Project and the proposed facilities, proposed EMWD financial participation and its associated benefits, as well as next steps and anticipated schedule. As identified in the staff report, EMWD executed a settlement agreement with the prior landowner and developer in 1989 It required EMWD at its sole cost to relocate its existing 36-inch recycled water pipeline that was constructed outside of dedicated right-of-way and easement. In addition, staff identified several opportunities with the Park West specific plan to include facilities oversizing to accommodate area growth. The Park West specific plan is currently approved for over 1,600 residential dwelling units to be implemented over two major phases. Currently, the developer is advancing its phase one, which is adjacent to and south of Nuevo Road, and is the basis of today's request for funding. The phase two timing at this point is unknown. This is just a summary of the units that are approved for Park West, with phase one at 531 dwelling units and phase two at 1,080. The proposed oversized facilities is specific to recycled water and sewer pipeline facilities. And as mentioned, this is to accommodate area growth and optimize system operations. The key details of the 1989 settlement agreement include EMWD's relocation of the conflicting recycled water facility in Evans Road would be deferred until the developer advanced their project construction. Sums up with the, oh, there it is. And also, in the meantime, the developer granted EMWD a temporary easement until these relocations are complete. So it's been 35 years since this agreement was signed, and this activity is now commencing. As shown on this exhibit, which is also included in the board package, EMWD conditioned the developer to oversize the backbone gravity sewer pipeline in San Jacinto Avenue. And this oversized facility will provide the sewer capacity to serve additional tributary areas east of the Park West specific plan and eliminate the need of a proposed lift station. And this exhibit shows what EMWD conditioned the developer to oversize the recycled water line in San Jacinto Avenue that crossing the Paris Valley storm drain channel, and that is going to provide recycled water capacity to area development in the Paris Valley. This exhibit also shows the relocation limits of the 36-inch recycled water pipeline in Evans Road. The part that's within the development is about 1,900 linear feet, and that's the portion that's in accordance with the settlement agreement. Staff also included up to 800 linear feet of pipeline beyond that, based on leak history. And, you know, during construction, staff will be doing a field condition assessment. So if there is a need to replace that, the developers agreed to do that at Eastern's cost, and this funding request does include that potential. So this slide shows the breakdown of our funding request, with facility oversizing comprising $122,000 of the total and the remainder of $3.55 million comprising the 36-inch relocation. As demonstrated with past requests from development services, significant agency and community benefits, cost savings, and efficiencies are realized when these arrangements are timed and coordinated with land development projects. A few notable examples include cost savings from project administration, EMWD paying just the incremental cost of construction for an oversized facility, and in this case, operational cost savings when sewer lift stations are eliminated. So with the board's concurrence today, EMWD will execute necessary facilities and service agreements with the developer to include reimbursement for facility oversizing and the required relocations. A developer anticipates commencing their project construction in the early part of 2024, with completion of the construction in mid-2024. The recommendation before the board today is to approve and authorize execution by the general manager or his designee of a standard facilities and service agreement with Mission Pacific Land Company, PW Land Investments, to include facility oversizing and relocation reimbursement in the amount of $3,674,000 and appropriation of that amount from the wastewater and recycled water system replacement and expansion fund. With that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? We'll look for a motion and a second on the item.
I'll move the item.
Moved by Director Armstrong, second by Director Slauson. Make it a roll call vote, please.
President Polley?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0. Director Record absent. We'll go on to item D, which is to approve an authorized contract with Pacific Hydrotech Corporation for $1.2 million for the Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility Biofilter Structural Rehabilitation and Media Conversion Project for an appropriation of $1.5
million. Good morning, President Polley, members of the board. Thank you for the opportunity to present this project to you this morning. Before I get started, I'd like to recognize Ozzy Garibaldo with Pacific Hydrotech.
Thank you for being here, sir.
Thank you, Ozzy. And we'll get into the presentation. Quick overview of the topics we'll discuss. To highlight, the first three will be kind of review of a previous presentation, with the remaining being kind of the new information to share. By way of background, the Temecula Valley RWRF utilizes a biofilter to capture and treat foul odors. The biofilter is currently loaded with organic media to remove the odor. The wood media has decomposed over time and consolidated in the filter, resulting in airflow being impeded through the filter, resulting in nuisance odors. This is a plan view of the biofilter, showing the foul air fans that pull the air from different points in the facility through the main header and then through the diffuser pipes. This is a cross-section view of the biofilter, just showing again the diffuser pipes and the main 30-inch air header. Again, another cross-section view that is showing the different layers, showing the organic wood bark media, soil media, and the drain rock. I want to point out the 30-inch foul air duct there that you see that's located in the media. That'll come up in a couple of other slides in the future. This is showing the compacted settled media on the surface there. That compacted media is decomposed and then will foul the rock layer of the media. That results in uneven air distribution through the media that we observe through our biofilter smoke test that we do annually. Previously, we did an assessment of different media that we could use to replace the current organic media. It was determined that we would go with an engineered media, and some of the benefits of that media is that the media doesn't break down. It's engineered. It maintains porosity and consistent airflow over time. It's stable, consistent treatment of odors compared to the organic media, has a longer warranty period of 10 years or more, and it's made from 100% recycled glass containers. So that was kind of review. So in August of 2022, the board approved the purchase of the engineered media. Previous experience taught us to ensure all media was produced and or delivered prior to contractor mobilizing on site. So we received confirmation from that contractor that the media would be delivered or could be delivered February of 2023. Prior to all of this, in January of 2022, we hired HDR as a consultant to conduct a condition assessment of the biofilter structure. They did a visual inspection for cracks, exposed aggregate, spalling, and other physical defects. They did sounding for delamination of concrete, measurement of free corrosion potential. They also collected 6 2-inch core samples to perform chemical analysis and other laboratory tests. Based on the condition assessment, the recommendations from HDR were to rehabilitate the biofilter wall internal concrete surface by removing and replacing approximately 1.5 inches of concrete thickness throughout the media elevation. To perform that rehabilitation, it utilizes a hydrojet demolition machine to remove the concrete surface
and protect the sound infrastructure, and then replace that removed concrete with 4,000 PSI hydrophilic concrete. So the original RFP for the rehabilitation effort and media replacement was advertised in December of 2022, trying to align the dates of media delivery in February 2023 with mobilization of the contractor on site. At that time, we received one proposal at $1.2 million, but that proposed cost to complete the rehabilitation effort far exceeded the budgeted amount that we had in fiscal year 23. So we added funds to this fiscal year's OFA budget, and we reissued the RFP in July of this year. We had five contractors do an on-site job walk. From those five contractors, we received two bids, one from Pacific Hydrotech Corporation and the other from Genesis. While we have experience with Genesis performing a biofilter media replacement at our San Jacinto facility, both of these contractors are very reputable, and we ultimately selected the contractor who submitted the highest scored proposal with the lowest proposed cost and shortest projected timeline. This is a cost breakdown. We did highlight the initial purchase of the engineered media on our first line there at just over $600,000. The installation rehabilitation cost from Pacific Hydrotech at just over $1 million. And I want to highlight again that 30-inch air header that I mentioned in a previous slide. So because we weren't able to expose the entire pipe, there is concern that it may be corroded and we may need to replace that. So there is the potential replacement of that air header at approximately $173,000 for both of those cells. We are adding some consultant inspection work at $50,000, miscellaneous materials and district labor at $65,000 with a contingency at 10%. Just over 164, bringing the total estimated project cost at $1.5 million and total project cost with the purchased media at just over $2.1 million. Project schedule, if approved by the board, we would give the notice to proceed this month. They would mobilize on site the end of this month or early October, so begin the first cell, finish the first cell in early November, and begin work on the second and finish sometime late December, early January. I want to go back to that slide. Our recommendation at this time is to approve and authorize a contract with Pacific Hydrotech Corporation for the Temecula Valley RWRF biofilter structure rehabilitation and media conversion project in the amount of just over $1.2 million, an appropriation in the amount not to exceed $1.5 million, bringing the total project cost to just over $2.1 million. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Any questions on this?
No questions.
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Moved by Director Corona. Second by Director Slauson. Magda, roll call vote, please.
President Pauley.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Armstrong.
Aye.
That passes 4-0. Director Record absent. Thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you for being here today, sir. Appreciate it very much. We'll move on to item E, which is to approve and authorize award of contracts for Moreno Beach Tank Rehabilitation Project, $1.6 million, an additional appropriation of $2.3 million. Mr. Stone, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. As the introduction stated, I'm here to present the last of our annual tank rehabilitation projects for the year. This will be a recommendation for award to AMP Coatings. We have a representative from AMP here in the audience today. They've done several tanks for us in the past and have performed quite well for us. So as we've shared before, the district has a preventative maintenance program for its water storage tanks in which we dive those and inspect them once every 3 years. Based on those dive reports, O&M staff and engineering get together and decide which tanks we're going to bring forward for the annual rehabilitation program. This is the fourth tank for the year, which will wrap up this season.
Season of tanks.
It's interesting I say it that way because we talk about when we can shut them down. Is it's really just a short winter season, so that we have the tanks available during the summer when the high demands come. Anyway, so there's a photo on the upper left of the Moreno Beach tank. It's located in the city of Moreno Valley, serving the 1860 pressure zone. It's a little bit over 3.3 million gallons, and it was originally constructed in 1984. You can see from the photo in the lower right some of the work we're going to be rehabilitating, the surface rust and some of the other corrosion. The scope of work is a standard suite of an interior and exterior recoat. We've been removing the interior ladders from the tanks from a safety perspective because they degrade, and you know it's unknown how their condition is when the staff has to enter, so we actually enter with a tripod and swing chair if we need to go down into the tanks. New perimeter vents, also new guard railing, which is a safety feature, and a fall protection system within the roof hatch, and then, of course, the cathodic protection system, which corrodes that first rather than the tank. We entered into an agreement with Webb Associates for the rehabilitation design, and in June of 2023, we received four bids for the rehabilitation of this tank. As I said, Amp United is the lowest responsible bidder, in an amount of approximately $1.7 million. Engineer's estimate was $1.5 million on this. If you recall from the presentation last month, we had several over and unders on the other three tanks. So from a program perspective, we are at budget for all four of the tanks this year. The project will, should the board elect to approve the project today, we will be completed by April 29, ending the tank rehab season for the year. We would like to continue some services with Albert Webb and Associates and Kleinfelder. We negotiated fees as shown in the screen above. Albert Webb was the designer of record and subcontracted to Kleinfelder for structural inspection. So as we get into the tank and we blast off the interior coating, we will have the structural engineer out to look at some of the members and ones that are overly corroded, because it does chase underneath the coating system. We may end up having to do full replacements on some of the members rather than just repair work. So our recommendation today is an award of contract to Amp United in the amount of approximately $1.7 million, an execution of a contract with Webb for continuing services during construction in the amount of approximately $46,000, an administrative award of other necessary contracts to complete the project, and finally an additional appropriation of approximately $2.3 million to bring us to construction completion. And I'm happy to answer any questions that the board might have.
Questions on this? Director Slauson.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Is this the tank on Marina Beach Drive where it turns, where it curves?
I believe so. I'd have to look at an overall map.
I was trying to think of the elevation. I think it might be that. Okay. I'm just curious.
Would you like to move the item?
I would love to move it.
Director Armstrong, would you like to second the item? Very good. I have a motion to second. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly.
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you for being here, Mr. Stone. We will see you next tank season. All right. Very good. We will move on then to item F, which is a review proposed calendar year 2024-2025 recycled water rates and authorize a final draft publication and distribution of the Proposition 218 notices and set a public hearing. Mr. Adams.
Good morning. President Pauly, members of the board. As President Pauly stated, here to present the proposed 24-25 recycled water rates to set the public hearing and get authorization to send out the Prop 218 notices. So this outline of my presentation, I'm going to just briefly go over the recycled water system, give a little history, talk about our rate study that we completed last year, provide a high-level summary on the budget that was adopted by the board back in June, and then talk about the proposed water rates. Just cutting to the chase, we are making recommendations on the rates that are consistent with the rate study that was done last June, with 0% for ag in the first year, 3% in the second year, and then 3% for the others over the two-year period. I'll briefly cover the Prop 218 notice and then go into the recommendation. So here's the timeline, just a high level. Really to the left, we have really the history of the water rate study, recycled water rate study, that the board really instructed us to do 2 years ago back in June of 2023. We did complete that study back in April of 2024. The board adopted revised rates for 2023. Actually, we had a higher 5.8%, but based on that analysis and the rate study, actually had the 0% for ag and the 3% for the other categories. Recently, the board adopted the two-year budget The budget did assume the assumptions that were made in the rate study, so 0% for ag in year one and then 3% for the others. Today, in yellow, we're here to discuss those proposed rates and really set the public hearing for November 1st. At that point, rates will go into effect January 1st, 2024. So just quickly, so recycled water system has been around for almost or over 40 years, with the four treatment plants providing 49 million gallons per day for that system. With the major uses in ag, which we'll see, which is almost two-thirds of the uses for ag, the other portions for sports fields, landscape medians, and then, of course, the wetlands with San Jacinto Wildlife Area. 100% beneficial reuse is the strategic goal of the board. And then last year, with the wet winter, only almost 30,000 acre feet. So one of the lower years in sales for recycled water. Prior year, we had a pretty significant sales at 36,000 acre feet. So over that 40 years, we made investments over $283 million for the recycled water program. We have over 275 miles of recycled water pipeline. The map to the right shows you our system, certainly highlighting not just the reclamation facilities, but the storage tanks and our storage ponds. As noted there, 7,700 acre feet of seasonal storage with several tanks for that elevated storage and 24 active pump facilities. On the rate study that was done last year, really a comprehensive approach, taking a lot of different elements into that study, really looking at the beneficial use for ag, as you can see, really off the IRP from 2011 with the Recycled Water Strategic Plan in 2016. All these were points that helped support that study with really the goal of the 100% beneficial reuse to avoid the discharge, so there is a transfer from wastewater to help support it. And then, of course, winter and summer rate adjustments to incentivize use by ag. And then really focusing on ag really provides the benefit for them as far as the avoidance of groundwater pumping and stuff. So those rates are to incentivize them to use recycled water. Going next slide. So I know this is a little difficult to read, but we thought it was interesting just to sort of give the board a highlight of who are the users and the various components. So to the left, we have the backbone system. This is really our main ag users. We have 72 meters, but you can see the customer count at 31. I mentioned about two-thirds of the usages with that category. You can see the sales last year was over 15,000 acre feet. So really a huge amount from our ag customers that are on the backbone system. Going into the stabilized system, the first two columns are ag for on-demand, where we only have 21 customers with about 900 acre feet on an annual basis. You can see certainly large numbers with landscape. These are landscape mediums, golf courses are those two next ones, and then construction is the next one on stabilize in the brown. So on the stabilized system, 258 customers with about 6,300 acre feet per year. And then we do have contracted agreements. The first three are for the retrofit landscaping. Those are based on our potable rates, either 80, 85, or 90% of the potable. This is where we have helped them retrofit their landscaping. You can see the number of customers and the annual usage. And then you can see the golf course, R500, and then fish and game. And then the next one is the Heartland account. But you can see just right there with those contracted accounts, about 7,600 acre feet annually. All right. So just doing a side-by-side comparison on the acre feet that we talked about, but then also showing you the revenues generated by the different categories. On the left, you can see the ag, both ag on the backbone and then contracted and then on-demand again, two-thirds of the water sales as far as acre feet are for ag. You can see landscape and fish and game. But when you look at the dollar amounts, ag is a smaller portion, where landscape is a larger portion based on the rates. Here we just show a quick comparison of how our ag rates compare to other agencies. Again, every agency is a little different on what they're using it for and who their major customers are. But you can certainly see, we highlight EMWD's current ag rates, the 165 for summer and the 97 for winter on the far right. That's for our ag customers. And then you can see the non-ag at 624, certainly below the median and averages of comparing agencies within our region. Quickly on the budget, this budget was approved by the board this past June. Really, the summary is generates net margin to support both capital and debt service, about $4 million each year. You do see slight increases in revenues and higher increases in expenses. Overall, expenses over the 2 years are 7% each year. I did mention the $4 million each year for supporting capital projects and our debt service. Here are the capital projects, the top five projects, which really represents 93% of the overall capital budget for recycled water over the next 2 years. Just highlighting a couple of the major projects with French Valley Recycled Water Pipeline and the Dunlap Dry Pipeline Replacement. So really, you can see that about $4.3 million over the next 2 years. So jumping into the proposed recycled water rates, as I mentioned earlier, really staying consistent with the rate study that was done last year. There does include the transfer from wastewater, which is about 3.1% of the wastewater sales, will help support recycled water. Talked about non-demand ag holding constant for 2024 with a 3% in 2025. And then when you look at demand ag, 3% across the board for 24 and 25, and that's both demand ag and non-ag rates. And then the agreements, I highlighted those agreements. All of them have different requirements. Things like fish and game is the example that has a 20% increase over the next 2 years for each year to get them up to the ag rates. But every agreement has a different rate based on those negotiations. Go to the next slide. So I'm going to go through these really quickly. So these are the non-demand ag rates. As you can see, in 2023, the rates don't change in 2024, and then the 3% in 2025. You see the summer and winter rates, but there's also the incentive rate. When storage gets to a certain point, we do incentivize the rate to have people take more water during the winter to try to avoid that discharge. Here's the rates on the stabilized system, which is demand ag and non-ag. You can see the 3% increase in each year. Construction and temporary meters has also the 3%. Or actually, it's tied to a potable rate, so that increase is a little bit higher at 6%. And then here are the contracted rates. Just going through, you can see the different retrofit rates for the top three. The Heartland rate is for the Hemet Golf Course, which was a 20-year agreement that was done many, many years ago, which is tied to one of our potable rates. Department of Fish and Wildlife, you can see that 20% increase over the next for each year over the next 2 years. And you can see some of the other rate increases. And then part of the study had a daily service charge being matched with what our potable water rates are. And so those are mirroring potable for the next 2 years. I do want to highlight that meters that are 2 and below match directly. Those meters that are 3 inches, it's 75% of the potable 3-inch daily service charge. And then in the cases of 4 and above, they match the three-inch daily service charge. And this is consistent for the past 5 years. So next, Prop 218 notice, which was attached, the draft was attached to the agenda packet, which is going to be sent out to that 300-plus customers, really discusses the recycled water system, but talks about our efforts to, try to reduce the impacts of inflation as much as possible. It does highlight the public hearing on November 1st and then talks, again, about the rate increases and then the findings of the rate study that was recently done last year. This is sort of our standard for recycled water. We'll mail out the notices, certainly highlight the fact that it's important that there's proposed rate increase information. We'll send out our e-blast, website postings, and social media postings, as always. So today's recommendation is to affirm the rate design methodology of the 2021 recycled water rate study, approve final draft of the Prop 218 notice, and set the public hearing for November 1st. And with that, I'm available for any questions.
John, can I just maybe just add a couple of things? I just want to clarify that with this proposed staff recommendation, we would be getting on the same cycle as a water and sewer Prop 218 process. With the 2021 recycled water rate study that was approved by the board, we were off sync, if you will, in terms of off cycle. So this action would put us back on cycle. I also wanted to mention, just highlight a couple of things. Whenever I speak to other general managers at other agencies, frankly, they are envious of Eastern's recycled water system. You know, this system that we operate and maintain is second to none nationwide. The fact that we've been able to invest over $280 million, largely provided by grants from federal and state partners, while keeping our rates the lowest in the region, is just an incredible success story. And we're not just stopping here. We're, you know, one of the things that John mentioned that I wanted to highlight is over the past year in working with ops, we've been able to convert a large number of our construction meters from using potable water to recycled water. So we're going to continue to advance this program and elevate this program. Obviously, you're all been supportive of our Pure Water project as well. But the fact that we can continue to do all these great things and keep our rates to our customers at some of the lowest in the region, and maintain our commitment that we made to this board last year to keep the ag rate, which is our largest partner in terms of purchase, at 0% for another year, I think is just a reflection of the hard work of the staff and the organization. So I just wanted to highlight that.
Director Armstrong.
Well, I'm glad that we're getting on the same rate cycle. So then this would be the end of rate season too.
Right.
I guess. But I didn't notice this or not, but I still think that our ag rate, we used to have to our wholesale, or to our, like to Rancho, a discounted ag rate to Rancho that went away. And I always thought that shouldn't have went away. So I don't know if we're still exploring whether or not there should be that ag, or if there is one in place now again, or if there should be.
No, and
there is.
There is a special rate for Rancho. That and maybe you can pull it up. I don't know if it was in that table, John, but I think beyond what is currently available, I have had a number of conversations with the general manager at Rancho about providing an ag rate, not just the rate that is established for the agreement, and if there's a possibility of that ag rate being provided to EMWD's sewer customers, since they're contributing to the generation of that recycled water. I mean, to me, that has merits. I've raised that issue a number of times over the last 2 years, and the response I've gotten is, you know, they don't have yet a tiered rate structure that would reflect what I'm suggesting, but they would look at it, and they haven't gotten to it. But I continue to raise the issue on occasion, and I will continue to do so, because I do think that if there is a sewer customer of EMWD who's contributing to our recycled water, although they're not our recycled water customer, I think there's a rationale that our ag rate should be passed on to them. So I've made that argument.
I have a question.
Yes, Director Krona.
On the Pure Water project, okay, how is that eventually, is the potential there for that project to compete with ag use? So you're going to have this project where you're going to want to put it into the underground. At the same time, we're using almost 100% of the water for ag. So where's the water? Obviously, there's going to be growth and everything else. That's going to take time. So I'm concerned that at some point you say, golly, gee, you know,
farmers are paying this much, but gosh, if we have to buy recharge water, you know, we could use this recycled water and, you know. Give me a speech on that one.
If I can maybe try to respond to that. That's a great question, Dr. Corona. And, you know, we've looked at this over the years as we've developed the Pure Water Program. As you indicated, the key element is growth. Our service area continues to see significant growth. Over the last decade, we grew at 15%. So for us, this proposed program is really a succession plan, meaning as we continue to grow, we need to find a home for our new recycled water. We will never, as long as I think I'm here and then the board is supportive of our ag customers. You know, we look at our ag customers as our partner, frankly, from the days when we started the program. So they are a priority for us. And frankly, I think what you see here is the rate structure reflects the fact that they are a priority for us. So we would not shortchange our ag customers in the interest of our Pure Water Program. The idea is that we, you know, this winter, unfortunately, all of our storage is full, and we've had to discharge recycled water down to Prado, which we don't like to do, but we had no option. Having our foot on the pedal in terms of recycled water, especially in the winter, is really a key benefit of the Purified Water Program. So that's why we've always said we may not be delivering any Title 22 water in the summer when our ag demands are their highest. We would operate the pure water component, which is only 2 MGD. Keep in mind, 2 MGD out of what we generate on average, about 50 million gallons per day and growing, that's 5% of our daily wastewater that is processed. So when you look at where we're going as a service area, how we're growing, and the fact that this is really intended to help us avoid discharge in the winter, we believe it is absolutely the right program to advance, recognizing the board's priority, recognizing that the board wants to continue to reaffirm our partnership with the ag community.
Okay, I got another question. So this last winter, you have the winter price, the $49 price. How many people took advantage of that? I mean, when it rains and everything's wet, who wants it? I mean, that's how it ends up getting discharged. So
I do not know that off the top of my head. I don't know if Matt does, but
yeah, we just make it available. It's automatically, you know, applied to people's rates for whatever they do use. But you know, we'll put the rate into effect and then we'll call some of the farmers and things and make sure they understand it's available. What are your plans? Does this actually influence some decisions you're going to make? And I think they appreciate it, and perhaps they do make some decisions where they would use some more water, but it's kind of hard to tell just with the weather and things. You can't really see a big change in the data in terms of sales. So we put it out there as something to do to help incentivize the use, but it's been difficult to really quantify what additional sales come as a result of putting it in place.
And Matt, maybe if I can add a little bit to that. I think, to your point, Dr. Corona, in a exceptionally wet year like we had this last season, not many, if any, will take that opportunity. But in an average wet year, that incentive rate may make a difference. So when everything is wet for an extended period of time and we get a storm every week or two, then none of our ag partners will want to take the water. But if it's just an average wet year, and when we do trigger this special rate, it's not just for 1 month. It's for the entire season. So we communicate with our customers so that they're aware this is going to be available for the entire season. Plan ahead so that if you are going to plant your fields, just make sure you're aware that we're going to make this available to you for the whole several months. So it does, I think, make a difference in an average wet year. Exceptional wet year like we had this year, you're absolutely right. We probably didn't have any takers of it.
So that's also made available to Rancho.
Yes.
And absolutely. Rancho didn't take any either, did it?
Not this year. They have in prior years, but this year they were full, and I think they declined to take any water this year.
Yeah, they were also very full and just had nowhere to put it.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Armstrong.
Just a follow-up on that. Is there a cost to discharging the recycled water if we don't use it?
There is, and that is the basis of providing the...
It says $95 in your presentation.
Yeah, the average over the last few years. So it's
rough. Then who pays for that? Is that part of the recycled water customers' rate development?
If I'm not mistaken, John, it's part of the contribution from the wastewater customer.
That is correct.
So as John mentioned earlier, there is a 3% of our wastewater
revenue
is provided to support our recycled water program. The basis of that is, if you were to exclude the recycled water use and assume there's no recycled water use, what would the wastewater customer be obligated to support in terms of not only treatment but ultimately disposal? Now, fortunately, we hardly ever dispose of that product. It's a commodity. But we do run the numbers assuming that they're responsible for that.
Any other? Let me just, before we go to vote on this, I'll chime off at Joe. Just an anecdotal. The other day I was walking my dog at Brookfield Park, which is currently completely torn up because they're Valleywide's putting in the purple pipe that we have connected our system to. But just hearing some people talk and recognize that, oh, they're changing over to recycled water at the park here, that's great, just kind of made me think, oh, people are getting in their brains, purple pipe means recycled, and I'm very glad that we're putting a couple of our new parks on recycled. So with that, is there a motion?
Well, for the purposes of the Prop 218 hearing,
yes,
I will
this
vote.
Is to put
I
it,
will
make the motion to put it on the November
right.
1st meeting. That's correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Set the public Cronin, hearing, send out the notice.
For the purposes of putting on the November
right.
1st
I just,
meeting.
I don't want you to feel too comfortable.
Makes right. the motion.
I understand.
Do I have a second on that? Director sure. Slauson. For purposes of putting the November 1st on the meeting, may I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent, and I'm sure we'll look forward to a vigorous discussion on November 1st. With that, can we take a 10-minute break, Mr.
Sure.
Vice President? Okay, we're going
to
take a 10-minute
break.
We're going to take a 10-minute break before we move on to informational.
Okay. Well, the women owned. Yeah. But I've never heard
we could bring the meeting back to order.
Business before. What's it mean?
It must be minority.
Hmm.
All right. We will move on to item 5 on our agenda this morning, which is informational items. Mr. Brown, you were going to tell us about EMWD's apprenticeship program and participation with the Metropolitan Water District.
Good morning, everyone.
All right.
I'm excited to be here today to talk about our apprenticeship program and our partnership with Metropolitan. So EMWD has faced challenges over the years hiring trained technicians, specifically control technicians and mechanics. And so, you know, when times are good in the economy, it's more difficult for us to hire trained staff or get well-rounded staff. So in 2016, with some help from Director Record, we were able to get Metropolitan to agree to allow us to participate in their apprenticeship program. So the goals of the program are to develop journey-level electricians or control technicians and mechanics, and then it provides classroom training along with on-the-job training. So apprentices for the district, we actually hire the apprentices. We usually bring them in on board about a month or two before the program starts, and we'll get them all caught up on our safety training, all of our processes and procedures for time card and that. And then after that period, MET's program will kick off, and our apprentices will participate in their program. So they'll participate a couple months on site with MET for their training, and then they begin the on-the-job training at our site. So we pay a fee to Metropolitan per apprentice. We currently have two electricians that are in the program, And it's a four-year program. So they have classroom activities at Met. They have also at Mount San Antonio College. They have a great welding shop there. They do welding training there for the mechanics. And then we have our on-the-job training. So upon completion of the program, our apprentices will be placed into their classification, whether it be a mechanical technician or a control technician. They're placed into the job, and they're full-fledged, ready to go. And it's great for us because we have an employee that already knows our system, already knows our time card, and we can hit the ground running with them. And it also helps us because they are so well-trained. Oftentimes, they can provide training to our other staff that might be weaker in an area. So if we hire somebody, say, with a strong pump testing background, a pump rebuild background, we'll utilize that staff to train other staff within the department who might be weaker in that area, and we try to do that for cross-training. Well, when we hire an apprentice or when we get one of these apprentices there, they're fully trained, fully aware of all the processes that we use. So it's a great opportunity for the district. So this is a little hard to see, but this is the on-the-job training that our staff perform, and this is an example of the mechanical program. So the great thing about this is we've got to build this to meet what EMWD needs. So for our mechanical apprentices, they're able to work on the potable side, they're able to work on the lift station side, they're able to work in the machine shop, they learn welding, they do all these different things, and they have to meet all these hours, 7,280 hours to be able to do that. So it covers safety, it covers everything. So we'll have someone that'll come in and know the entire mechanical side of it, lift stations, potable side, and then we can use them where they're needed at that point. So I want to introduce David Jimenez. David is our most recent graduate. He just graduated a month or so ago on the mechanical program, and he's hit the ground running. He graduated the program with an overall score of 92%. He's already completed numerous projects, one being there on the bottom left at Brasu Booster where he did the repipe there. And then on the top right, he's guiding the crane for the state water project at Paris Filtration where we're installing a 24-inch clay valve. So he's an example of someone that's just hit the ground running and knows exactly what he's doing and can take on any project that we have right now.
Thank you for being here.
So we've had previous graduates, too. We've had two previous control technicians. Metropolitan calls them electricians, but they're control technicians. They'll do everything from running conduit all the way up to programming PLCs. It's full gamut. And so we've had two previous in electrical. It's Gary Gibbons and Mike Lynn. And we have two current staff that are in there, and it's Lauren Cameron and Reggie Stagger. So they're in the program right now. They're in their first year. So we've reached out to Metropolitan. They're going to have a new program starting in summer of next year. And so we're trying to reach out to them and add another mechanical apprentice to that program. And we're currently working with HR on that. They have a great program. They've recently shifted their staff, and they have a new campus near Diamond Valley. And it's got great areas for classroom and training. And they're like final testing in that. It's no joke. It's a serious, like they're given a certain amount of pipe. They will construct that pipe in a certain amount of time, and there's no extras. There's no spares. So they've got to be right on with their measurements and right on with everything they do for pipe fitting. And it's the same for controls. They have the same rigorous testing. So it's a great program and a great benefit to the district. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Richard Armstrong.
Yes, I want to. I had the opportunity to attend the ceremony for the completion of this class from 2023, and it was a really great event to go to that. 7,280 hours, that is a lot of hours of training. I mean, that's substantial. But the graduates that graduated there were very proud. Then their families there with them. You could see how hard they worked. There was emotions. I mean, it was really a serious event. And I just think it's wonderful that Eastern is participating in this. And I've had this program come up in a couple different meetings at Met. It was clear that at the Met board that Eastern is the only member agency that's participating in this program. And the Met board would like to see, or the Met agency would like to see more participation in that. So it's another example of Eastern in a leadership role. And I mean, and it's important for us to develop new talent and succession planning, et cetera. And then I think since then, there's been a number of meetings where other agencies are learning more about it and now are maybe thinking about getting involved in it. I know Western has brought it up. Elsinore Valley has brought it up. And I think it's great that we participate. It develops really great talent. And as you pointed out, I mean, these are you know, very skilled, very talented graduates that come out of that program. And I think it's just one more tool in our shed of developing talent, internships, apprenticeships, all of those things. And so just great job on that.
Director Slauson.
Yeah, I would echo everything you said. I'm thinking of it as an employee. It's, you know, we invest in reimbursement for college degrees. Mm-hmm. This is just as important. And then you're getting sort of a quick, concentrated study. You might learn it on the job. It may take you 10, 15 years. So you can move right in. You have a sort of a cross-training knowledge. I think this is invaluable in the knowledge that these people get. So I
agree.
Thank you for all your hard work.
No, I agree. All the kind of training programs we're involved in pays off. Everybody in our workforce is important at different levels, and I want to make sure that we always have the investment on the you know, for some of our skilled labor people to, because frankly, Matt will probably tell us, the district doesn't work without them.
That's right.
So anyway, thank you for a great presentation. I'm glad that Met's participating, and hopefully we can get some more agencies of people coming out here. So, and sir, thank you again for being here today. Appreciate it very much. All right. We'll go to item 6 on our agenda, which is to receive and file various board committee reports and other reports. I'll make a motion. Do I have a second by Director Corona? Get a roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Will bring us to our calendar review. Tammy, good morning.
Pauly, members of the board, good morning. This morning I have a handful of events for your consideration. And one you won't find listed here, but is a reminder that on Wednesday, September 27th, is EMWD's State of the District. It begins at 7:30 a.m. with breakfast, and it will be held at the tent by Trumbull Pond. And moving on to the list of events, on Monday, October 2nd, we have Rancho Water District's Demonstration Garden Ribbon Cutting in Temecula. On Thursday, October 5th, we have the Rivers and Land Conservancy 10th Annual Gala in Jurupa Valley. Wednesday, October 18th is Supervisor Chuck Washington's State of the 3rd District 2023 Address in Temecula. Thursday, October 19th is City of Menifee's 15th Birthday and State of the City of Address, which takes place in Menifee. And the flyers for these events, some of them are attached here, and those that are not are made available from Sonia, who is here with them for you. Moving on to page 2, we have the board's master calendar for the next 2 weeks. And it's shown on page 2 in the top of page 3. If you could please take a moment to review this and let me know of any updates. And on page 3, bottom of page 3, we have the future or upcoming scheduled events. Starting with Saturday, September 9th, we have Science Under the Stars in Hemet. Wednesday, October 25th to Thursday, October 26th, we have the Building Industry Association and Building Industry Show, which takes place in San Diego. Sunday, November 12th to Tuesday, November 14th are the D.C. legislative meetings in D.C. Tuesday, November 28th to Thursday, November 30th is the Association of California Water Agencies, the Aquafall Conference and Expo in Indian Wells. Following that are the board meetings for the next 3 months, which are all on schedule. Moving on to page 4, we have the board committee meetings. And I'd just like to make note that the September 21st Board Executive Committee meeting was canceled. And the October 5th Administrative Committee meeting has a start time that was changed to 8 a.m. Following that are the joint interagency meetings, which are all on schedule. And we have one board member with an out-of-office schedule on Thursday, September 21st to Saturday, October 22nd. And the district holiday schedule is as follows. November 10th is Veterans Day. November 23rd through the 24th is the Thanksgiving holiday. So district offices will be closed on these days. Are there any questions or updates? Seeing none, that concludes my report. You're welcome.
So we will do a director's attendance reports, and we'll start with Director Armstrong.
Okay, I attended a Metropolitan Ad Hoc Committee meeting, and that was really centered around an Orange County grand jury report that was issued regarding water resiliency in Orange County, and Met was asked to make comments to some of the recommendations and statements in that report, and so the Ad Hoc Committee went over that and provided direction to Met staff on that. Long-range financial plan discussion meeting. We had a planning meeting here with Eastern staff members. We're going to have a call tomorrow with Met's CFO and their budget director, and just talk about some of our thoughts and ideas related to their long-range financial planning. So that was a real helpful meeting. CalDESAL, just really nothing noteworthy there other than their next conference will be February 8th and 9th in Sacramento. The Diamond Valley Memorandum of Intent Implementation Committee. That's a really interesting committee because there's a lot of representation from various stakeholders in the area, Metropolitan, Riverside County Parks, Valleywide Recreation, City of Hammett, et cetera. So a lot of good updates. One that I thought was really interesting was Valleywide, I guess, has baseball fields out there, and they have pony leagues, organized events out there. They had over 50,000 people attending their pony league events out in Hammett last season. That's a lot. City of Hammett is implementing a cash for grass program, and already mentioned was this weekend is the Western Science Center's fundraiser, Science Under the Stars. And then the Retirement Trust Committee met and reviewed last year's portfolio performance. And I know for me, I walked away thinking the performance was really good. It was, the return was better than what we would have earned if the money was in our pooled funds. It's better than what we would have earned if we had given the money to CalPERS. It was a little below our benchmark, but still overall really a good first year, full year there of results, I thought. So that was good. Update with the general manager is just really appreciate those meetings. They're very helpful. EMWD's priorities at Metropolitan discussion meeting. So we have our inland joint caucus meeting with Orange County tomorrow, and we're going to have a discussion at that caucus meeting about priorities and where we align on priorities as a caucus. And so this was a pre-meeting on that. And then Menifee Council presentation overview. So we're going to be making our annual presentation to the city of Menifee tonight. And so that was a review of that, and looking forward to that presentation tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Corona.
Okay. My monthly update with general manager, of course, always really good. City of Temecula, Mary Ann Edwards recognition event, it was very nice. A lot of people showed up to congratulate Mary Ann for her years and years of service to the city of Temecula. The Cahuilla settlement discussion, that was very interesting, different. And the Myriad Temecula group did not meet last week. They will be meeting this Friday. And that's all I have.
All right. Very good. I had a good bi-monthly meeting with our deputy general manager on some of our financial and HR issues. I was not able to attend the IE Works board or special board meeting this last month. Retirement Trust Committee had that was a good meeting. Ellen, who I think is our advisor, is retiring. So Laura helped me with the new individual who's coming in.
Yes, we don't have the name yet.
Okay.
But we are going to meet with him and bring him to our first meeting next year.
Okay, but other than that,
I don't have a name, but it's a him.
It's a him. We know it's a him.
But did our performance reviews, and I think things are all on track there, and I appreciate over the years Ellen helping us out, but again, we know people do at some point retire. Kauai settlement discussion, Nick did a fine job of doing that, and legal counsel was there, probably more to come on that. They have a myriad of ideas for water use out on the reservation, and it was good to hear what some of their ideas were. So I had a meeting with Linda, Councilwoman Linda Cooper of Hemet, on some water master. She's the president of the water master, and I'm the treasurer, so we wanted to catch up on that. Same day we had the water master. There are some decisions on allotments and things coming for this board. I've asked Baruz to hopefully we can get him in here in the next couple of meetings to kind of update this board on decisions we're going to have to make concerning the water master going forward. And then the general manager and I met with Michelle D'Armand, who works for the County of Riverside, kind of quarterbacking the County of Riverside is going to build a fairly substantial infrastructure wellness village in the Mead Valley area. And I know Supervisor Jeffries, because it's kind of new construction, asked me to at least connect some people. So Joe was kind enough to meet with her and make sure that what our connection capabilities are going to be in the future. So I think that was good to kind of understand what the county was looking for, and probably more to come on that. But I do appreciate Joe taking the time to do that. Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended the State of the City. The EMWD had a table, so Joe was there and several other people. Attended Wake Up. Riverside Community Hospital was a sponsor, and there were updates from the city and the school district, and we had a board meeting afterwards. I had my update with the general manager, going over mostly the agenda items in a little bit of detail. Attended SAPA and planning or Project Area 24 yesterday, and we increased the medical insurance cap, authorized the GM to sign a task order with CWE for surface water quality monitoring, received an informational report on the Arundo removal, and then for the committee, we adjusted some of the reserve targets. Authorized a recording of a grant deed from flood control that should have been recorded 20 years ago, and authorized an agreement with Woodward and Curran for engineering services on the Inland Empire brine line Reach 4D. That's it.
All right, very good. Any director's comments or future agenda items? Seeing none, we will ask legal counsel if there's a need for closed session today.
We do, Mr. Chair, as described in Section 9A and B, pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 and 54957.
Very good. So let's take a minute or two to switch over to closed session. Okay, we are back in open session. Can I ask legal counsel to report out from closed session?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss San Diego County Water Authority versus San Diego Local Agency Formation Commission. By consensus, the board authorized district counsel to file a responsive pleading to that complaint. Also, the board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 to discuss public employment, labor negotiations, and succession planning. A report was given to the board. No formal action was taken in that regard. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. We will stand adjourned until Wednesday, September 20th at 9 a.m.
Thank you.